This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me...
Margaret Ellis Snelling.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Margaret, you came to Palmerston North in 1986.
Yes, came to this little place in Whakaronga at the end of 1986, 1 week before Christmas, from Wellington.
This place, so you came to the house here?
Yes. My new husband of the time had been shifted and had found a job at a place in Palmerston North, and we duly arrived to this enormous house after living in a motel for 3 weeks.
So he bought it in advance?
Bought it in advance. I had not seen it, but he had. And because he was in the agricultural field and I was still working in Wellington, in the Karatani unit for Plunkett Society in Johnsonville.
Okay.
And my two boys were finishing school, and their dad lived in just out of Wellington, so they stayed with him. We were in a motel, and the biggest excitement of a shifting was that the McDonald's opened in Johnsonville, and that took pride and prejudice over everything we were wanting to do. Excitement was all our wetsuits got stolen off the line at the motel. So what were we going to do for boating in the summer without wetsuits?
Yeah. So you had your husband, your boys from an earlier
marriage.
Yeah. And they came with you here?
Yes. The youngest one came with us. The eldest one was on an exchange in Tahiti. Mm-hmm. Where he learnt about seeing naked women on the beach, that set him up for his high school years at Boys High in Palmerston North, of which he arrived at the day before school went back, and was astounded to find that his mother had bought him what they referred to as Jesus sandals, because he was wearing black shoes, he thought. And coming from a co-ed school in Wellington to Boys High on a bus service, he was bit bewildered, but fitted in really well, and really enjoyed being at a school where most people did as they were told, rather than being the only person that did as he was told class. So he enjoyed Boys High, even if it did involve marching for 2 weeks or something.
Yes, I'm the sort of cadet for school.
Because I understand, there was like, that's why you needed good shoes, not new ones.
Okay, so when you said you moved to a big place, it's a big house and a lot of land, is it? How much land is there?
And so it's a reasonable sized house, single story, which makes it bigger, but it's on 20 acres.
Okay.
I thought I was going to enjoy 20 acres because, having been a Karatani nurse, the thought of feeding calves in the right season really appealed. Still does today, except it is very hard work and I don't do it anymore.
Yep.
But I enjoy on the farm life here. I'm not much good with the chainsaw, but I do like to keep it to a decent standard.
So it's something that the two, when you moved here, both of you developed the 20 acres?
The farm, the 20 acres was all very well developed when we came here.
Okay.
Had been a horse stud place. And so the fences were all wooden and wire and lacing wire and... No, it was well developed, and it is even now, after all this time, it is only beginning to break down now, and I don't have the capacity to fix it all of the time. Electric fencing, I'm okay on.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it was well developed with concrete block stables with cedar doors, with hot water supplied to them, lighting supplied to them, water to every little thing that you had for horses. Mammoth hay shed that you could fit an army in. But no, all developed, so it's been really good. And I just then made bigger gardens, which...
What, vegetable gardens or flower?
One big vegetable garden, and I won the stallion paddock, which was next to the house behind big high fence. That's been converted to a garden with a pond and gazebo. Fine when there's two of you doing it, when there's only one, not so good.
Yeah,
but still interesting, and I think as long as the lawns are mown and you need a backpack and a lot of Roundup.
Yeah. So was it a big adjustment coming to a place like that?
No, I really loved it.
Yeah.
I did
a
bit of Karatani work when I first came, but it's close to Palmerston North, but far enough away where it's very quiet. A lot of bird life now.
Yeah.
And
was there then? When you
first
came?
No, not when we came, but I planted a lot of trees that may attract them, but there's certainly a lot of tuis, there's pheasants running around the front lawn if you're quick enough to see them now. A lot of native birds have come since we've been here.
Yeah.
But then we don't have boys on motorbikes and things now. It's just very peaceful here, and we don't have a cat or a dog, so I'm sure the birds know that.
Okay. And it's a strong, small local community, you found?
I think when we came, got involved in the community very quickly because my late husband had always been a community person and been a stock agent, so he knew how to work the scene, and I just followed suit.
Okay.
But there's a lot more larger sections around Whakaronga now, so I don't believe the community is... as strong.
You mean instead of it being farming, it's more lifestyle. Yeah.
Yes, and also when you don't have children at the local school, you don't keep in contact as much as if you've got kids there.
Because it's either the school or the church would be the centre.
And there was no churches close to Whakaronga, Bunnythorpe being the closest one, but the school was the focal point. And even after our youngest went to high school, I still remained in contact with the school as the pianist of the area that could play for the Christmas carols and things like that. And then I used to do the board elections when they were held as the person that counted the votes, etc. And stood for the school board of trustees when the community people were... So I kept in contact with the school, but once you leave... And the how people lived started changing. They built big houses on chopped up little acres. Bought the ride on. Stayed a few years and moved on.
So is that community aging here then, or you've got?
No, I don't think it is. Okay. The street in which I live now is definitely aging, but you only need one family to move one. Elderly couple to move out and a young family move in, and it soon changes. You get involved in fireworks and all sorts of things, buying the chocolates for the school, and you don't have any money anymore. You don't have EFPOSs with the kids. But no, I found it easy to fit in with the so-called country life. I really enjoyed it. My mother had come off the farm, so I wasn't totally... I'd spent a lot of my childhood school holidays on farms just out of Canterbury. I felt quite at home here. Yeah. And Whakaronga was one of the few places that my mother had ever visited in her youthful years, because at university she'd come to stay with a friend who lived at Whakaronga and whose house is still on the main road today.
So it didn't feel so isolated if you
No, not for me, because I've been Karatanying for a few years, and often you were quite isolated when you were looking after other people's children while the parents were away.
Oh, okay. So what was the Karatani role then? Do they still do this now?
I think Karatani, probably Karatanis now work in Plunket units or childcare type things. But it was a program set up by Plunket, by Sir Truby King a long time back, to look after babies who were ailing and give mothers a hand. And certainly in Canterbury, Karatanis were used by the more affluent people while they went on holiday to look after their children.
Oh, so it was almost
basically
a step
a
up from a nanny, so a step up from
and
a nanny.
And I think if you went to England, you'd be called a nanny.
Okay. Oh, well.
So I was, and I don't mind a bit of isolation.
Okay.
But the only thing that I did notice that I hadn't ever thought about is in, when there's no moon, how dark it is out here. No street lighting or anything. It is absolutely pitch black.
That's right. So you need a torch to follow
the
road.
Need the big gym. So, no, it's good. And I still enjoy it, and I'm not looking forward to moving, really.
No, because I was going to say, because you mentioned you were widowed, so...
Yes, sorry, but I've been widowed in here for 20-odd years now. It's just that I... not so good with the chainsaw or the heavy lifting. Once upon a time I could lift two bales of hay at once, now I struggle half a bale. So just takes longer to do things.
Okay. Yeah. So what do you do with your 20 acres?
So on the 20 acres I used to have a few sheep, but they got too heavy and I didn't fancy crutching them by hand every twice a year. So I just run 10 to 15 head of cattle, and I buy them in as weaners and generally heifers and winter them once, and then before Easter each year they go back to the sale yards and someone else hopefully buys them at a very nice price to take them on till they meet their doom.
So does that mean you've got enough feed here yourself?
Yes, so usually mostly I've been had good feed, and I buy in a bit of hay each year. If I don't make hay, I buy in a bit, and it all works out well, and I quite enjoy it. And in the winter, it's a good reason to get up because the animals need attention. Have to feed the hay or shift the electric fence, so do it while it's fine, and then you don't get wet.
Yeah. So you mentioned something about the electric fences before we started recording. So what is there now? Can I say you're in your 70s. You're here on your own with this stock that you're dealing with. You have to get up. What time in the morning do you get up to?
Well, I try not to get up early. 8 o'clock's the first I'll get up. In the winter, that is. In the summer, that's different. But 8 o'clock. So I hope by 10 o'clock to have done a few odd chores and have shifted the electric fence each day, just a break each day so the cattle have got fresh grass to eat. And
So this is quite... You're not just putting them in a paddock and leaving them there.
No.
Each day, so you're gradually moving an electric fence across the...
The full... I go the full size of the paddock, and if it's very wet, well, I might do it twice a day because all they do is walk in the grass and are still hungry. But just give them a strip each day, they get used to that.
Yeah.
And
about how wide?
The paddocks all vary in width around this place, so on most of the paddocks, I'd probably give them three metres wide each day. And I just judge it, if they're not eating at all, well, they don't get so much the next day. And if they don't eat the hay, they don't get any more of that either. But it's just a matter of making a judgment each day and dependent on the weather. But I enjoy doing that, and cattle and I get quite pally. But I still treat them with respect on the fact that because I'm here by myself, if they got a bit excited about seeing me, then maybe I might slip over. Getting older might slip and And yeah, so I enjoy doing it, and it's a worthwhile thing to do in the winter because I'm not an avid reader, and you can't do housework forever.
Yep.
And if you start cooking, you eat it and get fat. So it's best to be outside.
Yeah, yeah. And the, and that takes a bit of time, does it? With
well, I can go slow or fast. And yeah, some days if I have an appointment or something else may be on, I will just leave it till it suits me. But I generally try to have it done by 10, 10:30 because I believe that cattle are like humans. They like to eat.
Yeah. And they got habits and habit. Routine. Yeah,
yeah, they have a routine. And they will be waiting if I'm late. So
yeah,
if we all know our routine, we'll all get along fine.
Yeah, and they get to know you and they're relaxed, yep, and they friendly do to you.
Yes, or? And I just think that they're reliant on me, and my other reason for trying to do it very well and give them, feed them well, is because I've invested a reasonable amount of money in them and I want a good return. I'm not doing it just for the sake of it.
So you don't feel any emotional problem?
No,
when
I
they...
do not. I have no trouble about putting them on a truck, even if they're not going to slaughter. Even if they were, I would have no trouble at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is my job.
That's the process, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so have you had any incidents with them? You say, you know, you got
I've had a couple of dead ones.
Oh, okay.
That's a problem because then who do you ring to bury a cow?
Hmm.
So you do a lot of ringing and then some poor soul will take pity on you and come and dig a hole. Yeah. But no, they're all pretty good. Occasionally they get out.
Hmm.
Sometimes I know why and sometimes I don't. But just run the electric fence across the road, dial up a neighbour or two, and they're back in no time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
And you often have visitors from other neighbours' cattle who get too, so...
Hmm. Yeah. So, but normally health-wise, there's...
No, I haven't had a vet for a very long time. Probably in... Probably about 15 years ago I had to get a vet. I had two cattle, they were weaners that looked like they were depressed. And they
really Well, you wanted a psychologist.
They did, yeah. So after a lot of thinking, I rang the vet who came out. And he did varying things and sent a large bill. But in the course of conversation with him, I just said, do you think they look depressed? And he looked at me as like I was needing to be locked up.
Yeah.
And he continued on. Anyway, they eventually died.
Yeah.
And when I looked up Mr. Google, because I thought, well, he wasn't very helpful, and I read about, and I just put in, do cattle ever look depressed? Yes. If they've eaten the leaves of an oleander bush.
Ah, yeah.
Which these two animals could have. And the chances were they had, and they don't need very much. Only a leaf would do it.
It will kill them.
Yes, and it did. And they had.
And there's no antidote to that, are there?
No, nothing. But what the most amusing thing was, the article about this animal, the best way to decide whether they'd eaten these is because they do look depressed, and the article had been written by the vet who I'd queried it. I thought that was quite interesting.
So he learned your experience.
He had written the paper, presumably for his PhD, but probably had no recollection. I still have the oleander bush today where it was, but when they're anywhere near it, I have it boarded up with the tarpaulin around it and an electric fence so I don't repeat the same exercise.
Now, I had heard it with, years ago a vet might come out to treat an individual animal, but now it's nearly all herd health, isn't it? So,
yes, I think. I haven't had a vet for so long, and you have to get the bigger animal vets to come out. We used to have them reasonably regularly when we get any cattle dehorned, but I buy polled cattle now, hopefully, so don't have that. They just know it. Apparently it is harder, and I can't be bothered with the hassle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try to keep them healthy.
Yeah, I think probably the cost of all that.
And I don't drench, mm-hmm. and I haven't put fertilizer on since my husband died.
Mm.
And I have no, don't appear to have a worm problem.
Mm.
But I don't do it organically. I'm happy to wander around with the backpack and the Roundup.
Mm. Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So besides that, you now you did some nursing after you moved here?
I just casual people who wanted their children minded while they did stuff. I did a little bit of that. But then I got involved with the I got involved with establishing a garden and doing the farm because my husband was busy working and he left it to me and he would tell me where I'd gone wrong, bearing in mind he had been a stock agent. So I bought the cattle at sales. When I got them home, he would tell me what he might have done.
So he didn't think of buying them himself.
Well, I wanted to do it because he had a job and this was my job.
So that
job.
Was your job, yeah.
This was going to be my job. Fair enough. Used to
You'll have learnt that, wouldn't you? Over
I did, and I sat next to some very old men, I considered them to be really old then, who had been, one particularly, had been a drover in his day, and he would tell me what I should look for in cattle and why, as a woman, I shouldn't buy them all because they just looked nice. I should buy them because of their growing looks. And yeah, he was a very useful man, and he used to ping me out every now and again and ask me what I was going to buy today and was I taking into account this, that. I learnt a lot from him. And it turned out he had been a drover most of his life, and he was the most interesting person to talk to about farming and cattle. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you say drover.
Yes, apparently he used to drive, well, coming from the, well, I come from the South Island, but he used to bring all these cattle, I presume, to Fielding for sales from all over the lower and middle North Island. And they had horses and dogs, and they just put them in farmers' paddocks overnight, watered, fed, camped, and moved on the next day.
So, you any idea when that stopped?
No, I don't, but probably because they ran out of people prepared to do that. But I think it was councils
also they
used that
didn't trucks
like,
and things, don't they?
Trucking started, and also councils, I presume, didn't like their drains being mulched along the way by cattle. But apparently it was a hard life.
Yes, yeah.
But this man was really, really interesting, and I learnt lots about buying cattle from him,
Okay. And what about activities in or did you get to Palmerston North much or you go into town much?
Well, it's close to Palmerston North here, but I go and I try to save the world by not using vehicles all the time. But mostly I've gone in every second day because we started up a business and that was necessitated going into the bank and the post office, so most days I go in, and then when kids at school, you had to take them everywhere, so there's no transport out of Whakaronga, so a taxi service, but you knew that, so that was...
You just
but you also knew where your kids were if they wanted picked up.
And it is a problem sometimes for if you've got teenage kids who want to be involved in everything in the social life and so on, did they feel it was a bit isolating out here?
Yes, they did, but only one. You can work around it because they got friendly with the other kids in the area, and so they used to pull in on when they were sort of going out to parties or whatever they like to call it. We had a roster system where the adults met at one house for a dinner, and somebody took all the kids in, and then you drew straws, and then somebody didn't drink, and they would collect them at the appointed hour, and they all had to meet up in the square at some place. If they weren't there, they had to find their own way home, and if they had no money, they soon used to find out it was best to be at the place. And of course, when they were in the sixth and seventh form, they would have money And so they soon learnt that they pulled their money, so they got one taxi back to Whakaronga.
Oh, yeah, okay. So they wouldn't drive?
No. We wouldn't let them drive.
Okay. But you wouldn't let them drive if they're partying and things because they might drink. But what about this idea of children in the country driving around they've been driving from very early.
All the kids around here could drive. Even the five-year-olds could drive cars. They just need to stand up.
Yeah.
They could all drive. They all could drive tractors, motorbikes. Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
They may not have known the rules, but they could all drive.
Okay.
They just had to learn the rules and sit the exams. Mm.
So growing up there, you talk about you were really quite happy and comfortable living out in the country. But did you grow up in that sort of environment? You were more
no,
in the city?
No, I lived on the outskirts of Christchurch. If anybody knows Christchurch, on the way to Akaroa, but not that far. There's my parents had a grocery store. It was the last grocery store on the edge of Christchurch, not far from Sunnyside Hospital, the mental institution in Christchurch, which is now closed. And they had a store there, and my mother came off a farm at a place called, we called it Taitap, but now it's called Taitapu.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go out there for school holidays, and because my parents didn't have a vehicle, an uncle would come in and get us once every 3 weeks and go out to the farm for dinner where my grandmother lived. Mm. So, I used to like the farm, and they had a dairy farm, so, used to love going out to the dairy farm.
Mm.
So, being out of it wasn't a bother.
Yeah.
We grew up in a grocery store. That was intriguing. Mm. And went to one of the largest primary schools in Christchurch in the day. And it was bounded by this Heathcote River, which nowadays is all fenced off and all very careful about children not getting drowned. All my siblings went to the school, so that, since we were all about 5 years apart, went over a long period of time. There was two rows of trees, and Lord help anyone who went past the first row, unless they had a reason and had got permission from a teacher to collect a ball. Everyone obeyed the rules, and nobody drowned.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.